Hi, I'm Ken.
And I'm Dee.
And we are the Antiques Freaks, and today we're talking about...
just the most thrilling subject I could think of. Plastic.
We're talking plastics. Specifically, the early plastic known as Bakelite.
I'm actually going to talk a little bit about celluloid. My first note actually says, I think it's important to talk about celluloid first.
I'm leaving.
What is wrong with celluloid?
I signed up for Bakelite. I did not sign up for celluloid.
Bakelite and celluloid, are their fates are forever entwined.
This is a fucking, like, yin-yang situation where, like, you can't have one without the other and each has a piece of the other one in it.
Like, literally, since celluloid was, like, the first, like, proto-synthetic plastic.
All right, so what year are we talking with celluloid?
Mid-1800s. No one's 100% sure, but, like, probably around 1850.
All right.
Celluloid was the first... quote-unquote synthetic plastic. It was not entirely synthetic. It utilized cellulose and camphor, which are natural elements.
I was not aware that plastics were not inherently synthetic.
Yeah, they are not. When you talk about things like maybe you're more familiar with rubber being
a natural plastic?
What? Yeah, it is.
Oh.
Buddy.
Okay,
it's
so
a kind of plastic.
In the periodic table of elements in Ken's brain, there was like the plastic element and the rubber element, and they were similar but different blocks.
They're similar but same. They're like different but same.
Is this like a rectangle square situation?
Yeah, just like reverse it because they're the same general like concept. Yeah, but rubber was like protoplastic because you would take natural rubber gums.
From the rubber
and
tree.
You could do things, fun things with them, like, you know, the compound known as gutta percha, just using old golf balls and just stuff in general. You know, there's a lot of kids playing with them in history.
Anything you need to be, like, elasticy bouncy.
Yeah, and people for a long time were trying to find ways to make it less, to make it stronger and less elastic for all sorts of things. So 1850s, you might remember that as being a part of the Industrial Revolution.
I do recall, dimly. Well,
the Industrial Revolution made it pretty important to everybody that they wanted to make materials that were easier, faster, cheaper, stronger, because at the time, it gets tiresome and old trying to make stuff out of natural material all the time, and it gets expensive.
Yeah, because, like, once you cut down all the rubber trees, like, where the fuck are you getting rubber from, son?
Yeah.
Wait another 20 fucking years for all the rubber trees to go back.
So that was where people got the idea to even try making celluloid.
Huh? Sorry, not to derail so early.
Oh, please.
This was a plot point in an early episode of Miss Fisher.
What is it with you? You find...
there, you were there because we marathoned the series together.
Oh, God, yeah, those are good.
Miss Fisher's Murder Mysteries.
It's a good show. God, it's great.
It's a very good show. It's about 1920s flapper in Australia solving murder mysteries, and it's very, very good.
Yeah.
In at least one episode, spoilies, gentleman was killed because he had discovered a recipe for synthetic rubber.
My God.
Yes.
That was the push to make synthetic plastics. Because we already knew what rubber could be used for and that it had promise. It's a compound of cellulose, alcohol, and camphor, and other chemistry stuff that makes stuff into other stuff is actually my note.
That's a pretty good note. Finally, you've broken it down to a level I can understand.
You might be familiar with it as the stuff that movie film is made of. You know, celluloid dreams.
Oh.
Yeah, celluloid is what early film strips were made out of.
Oh, cool.
It tends to be a soft yellow, in the way we'll see it when it's not in film, because it's very thin, it's basically translucent. A soft yellow with graining meant to imitate ivory. It was called French ivory, or ivory pyrrolin, to appeal to douchebags. Make it sound fancier than it was.
Is it French ivory in the way that black glass was French jet?
Yeah, apparently when it's fake and lame, it just, people just call it French. I don't know, I'm not like, this isn't me talking, I'm not trying to pass any judgment, but it seems like people have feelings about France.
It seems like, yeah.
and like how, like, good France was and how worthy. But they thought French ivory sounded nicer than celluloid. Actually, fun fact, celluloid is kind of a brand name, like Kleenex. There are, like, a good handful of names used to describe the plastic made of the stuff I mentioned.
Cellulose and camphor?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And alcohol. It wasn't super good for business.
It seems like it'd be very brittle.
It was. Unfortunately, it wasn't as strong or flexible as the plastic we're going to quickly soon talk about. But you could make a lot of things from it, which was fun and exciting for the Victorians. Mostly jewelry, dresser items, knife handles, toys. They experimented with making pretty much everything with celluloid at the time. Because it was cheap.
And it was new and shiny.
And it was easy to mold. It just didn't have a lot of industrial uses. Here's where things get problematic. It was very fucking flammable.
Oh.
Seriously flammable.
how when you're, like, running the projector with actual celluloid film in it and then the projector catches fire?
Yeah.
The film catches fire because you left it on one frame too long?
Yep.
Because it's very combustible.
It's super combustible. It has a ridiculously low ignition point. I looked it up and it was hard to tell because it was under a lot of jargon, but something like 180 degrees.
That's...
Which is a very low.
That's... four times more combustible than paper, I'm going to say.
Okay, but, like, paper is considered, like, a fire starter, so, like, you would hope most things were much less combustible than paper.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I wish more things were less combustible than paper, which it seems like celluloid is going in the wrong opposite direction of that.
Yeah, it is.
Wow.
Celluloid is more combustible than wood, which is interesting.
More combustible than oily newspapers. Like, what? How? How?
Yeah.
How?
Yeah.
How? Jesus. Okay, anyway.
my next note is, which you may notice is pretty fucking low. you know, it was, there's a lot of stories about celluloid film spontaneously combusting. Probably not as spontaneous as you thought. They were in storage, it would get hot. It's just that nobody realized that the flash point was that low. This is very important because I'm going to talk about ways to determine whether or not celluloid is real, because I think celluloid is very interesting. I'm more into it than Bakelite personally, just because it is, you know, the first plastic. People will often, for old plastics, suggest you do a test where you hit it with a heated pin to tell it apart from other materials. Do not do this with celluloid, it will catch fire.
I was gonna say, like, is the test for this literally set it on fire?
Yes.
If it's on fire, then it's real and also destroyed?
Yeah.
It seems very much like a witch test. Like, if she sinks, she was fine. If she doesn't drown, she's a witch.
Yeah,
like,
this isn't even the only way that celluloid sucks. Celluloid also, in like an airtight space, it will emit vapors that corrode metal. So when you're storing celluloid, you have to keep it, well, actually you have to keep them all completely separate and airtight for, I'll get into other issues with celluloid after, so to
other
determine,
issues?
Celluloid is, it was, look, it was a proto-plastic, it was very, it had problems.
You see, this is one of my least favorite antiques for a reason.
I love celluloid.
I know you do.
So, one thing about it that was why I would recommend keeping the pieces separate is, it will occasionally deteriorate, it's not supposed to, and nobody knows the exact mechanism or why it happens. They'll become very brittle, very flaky, and they'll start chipping, and in some cases, completely disintegrate.
Like cheap sex toys.
Ew.
Well, no, but, like, that's also true. That's why you're not supposed to, like, buy the cheap shit, because, like, if you put two cheap dildos in a box together, like, they melt into each other because the plastics are bad and interact poorly.
Yeah, well, the fun fact about that is we know what mechanism makes the plastics do that. We don't know that for celluloid. It's not clear what the conditions are to make it start doing it. The weirdest part, it's called celluloid rot. It's got its own name because, again, it's not a natural phenomena that we can, like, determine. The very fucking, like, the creepiest part is it's communicable.
Oh, okay.
Not to human beings, but to other pieces of celluloid.
Yeah, no, that sounds great.
It's recommended that even if your celluloid isn't showing signs of celluloid rot, you should be handling it with gloves that you change from piece to piece, because it takes very little to communicate celluloid rot to other pieces, and they shouldn't be stored, like, in a rough grouping. If it starts showing signs of celluloid rot, you should throw it away, because it's not worth compromising your whole collection.
So, to recap, this is an early plastic that is brittle, highly flammable, more flammable than paper, that's how flammable it is, and you can't store it near metal because it will destroy metal, and you can't store it near other pieces because they destroy each other.
They might.
Why is this collected?
Because...
why do people look at this and say, more, please?
I think celluloid is very pretty. I think a lot of the applications it's used for, like, I particularly like dresser items, dresser jars and stuff. They do tend to be ornamented, which is nice. And just because of the fact that it is the first plastic. This is, you know, plastic goes unappreciated, I think. Well, and it's also caused a lot of huge problems for us as a species, but it goes unappreciated as, like, a really serious innovation to the way we do things. And to me, I think it's very fascinating that we have real, whole, like, interactable examples of, like, the very first thing. And it's very cool.
It is very cool and historically significant. However, it's more flammable than paper and destroys all it touches.
Yeah, that's another thing, is you have to be very careful about how you store it.
Yeah.
Because, like, again, 180 is a degree that you can get in small enclosed spaces pretty easily on a hot day.
That's a degree you routinely reach in a car parked in sunlight.
Yeah, so be careful.
Wait, is that why you weren't supposed to store videotapes in your car?
Yes.
Oh.
I don't believe that the plastic was celluloid, but it's a derivative that also has a similar, like, low ignition point.
Oops. For those of you who aren't old enough to remember VHS, once upon a time, there were, like, cassette tapes that were just literally rolls of film in a plastic box that you watch movies on.
Yeah, they were also super flammable.
Yeah. If you left them in your car, they would just, like, crumple it on themselves and melt.
Yeah.
And now I know why.
Yeah, and it also, and like, if we're gonna recount its problems, it also has a communicable disease.
Oops.
So if you are still interested in celluloid, maybe you're more interested in it because it's so quirky and relatable.
That's a way of phrasing it.
To determine if a piece of celluloid is genuine, it's got a really unique thing. Simply run it under hot water. This will prevent the ignition point because hot water runs at like maybe 90 degrees. Just run it under hot water and it should emit camphor smell because it is made largely of camphor. If you don't know, camphor is what Vicks VapoRub smells like.
Oh.
Main ingredient in Vicks VapoRub is camphor. So that's all you need to do to see if something's celluloid.
So if you have an early plastic, run it under hot water and see if it smells like Vicks VapoRub.
Yep.
All right.
Specifically that for celluloid because, as we're going to find out, this is a common practice for lots of early plastics. Celluloid was the progenitor of our real subject, Bakelite. See, celluloid was kind of a success, but not enough of a success.
On account of always catching fire and destroying everything it touched.
Yeah, I just kind of remember that, like, the kids' toys were made out of this.
Oh, Jesus!
Yeah. So this was patented in 1909. Leo Bakelin created the first entirely synthetic plastic, and he named it Bakelite. And he, not only did he name it, he copyrighted and patented the fuck out of it. This is why, unlike celluloid, this isn't considered just like a brand name. It's because for a very long time, he was the only person allowed to have this compound. It's also known by the incredibly breezy, easy, beautiful word, polyoxybenzylmethylenegylcholinhydride. I just wanted to say that.
It just rolls off the tongue.
Just runs. So he wasn't trying to make plastic. This is just another one of those hilarious fuck-ups that really worked out in his favor. He was trying to replace shellac. Okay, so you're familiar with, like, resonating something, or, like, resonating's the wrong word. It's an entirely different word.
I am familiar with painting a piece of wooden furniture, for example, with thin coats of resin or varnish. Yes.
Yes, so shellac was the only way to do that for a while. Problem is, shellac is basically milked out of a specific bug.
Basically giving our furniture exoskeletons is what you're
telling me. Yeah, that is literally what you are doing.
That's pretty rad.
It's like exoskeleton milk. So a lot of people wanted to replace it, and a lot of people did. Leo Bakelind was not the first to the party, I think. I didn't really look this part up because this is not Bakelite related. This was his effort to make the best one. Instead, he made plastic.
Oops.
Since he was a smart fuck, he realized quickly that it did not conduct electricity almost at all. It was a very poor conductor. Which you'll find out is really good in a time of burgeoning electric. Didn't react to heat anywhere near the way celluloid did. It has a very high ignition point. Very high. Basically gave the industry a big old boner about how useful it was about to be. It was very durable. It was more flexible when heated. Basically just like a really good all-around plastic for the first truly synthetic plastic. You can make anything out of Bakelite, and they did. It was super durable. People loved the futuristic way it looked. Keep in mind, 1900s.
Early 1900s, the
beginning of the 1900s.
Yeah, like, I need you to specify because, like, we were born in the 1900s.
Yeah, again, patented in 1909.
Okay.
Made earlier, but yeah, people started knowing it existed around 1910. They made a lot of different stuff out of it. People loved the way it looked. People loved the way it felt. They, you know, put in compounds to, like, change the color to hide the fillers that they put in it to, like, harden it. And there's just, like, a shit ton of stuff made out of Bakelite. Like, if you can think of it. If it's made out of plastic today, they probably made out of plastic then.
What differentiates, to the average layperson, a chunk of Bakelite from a chunk of modern plastic?
Not a lot.
Oh.
Both, like, the color. People don't really make modern plastics in the colors, the limited palettes that they had at the time.
Such as?
70s colors, actually.
Gross.
A lot of people, like, assume that they're all made in the 70s because they all have that same, like, brown, orange, yellow, and green were the easiest pigments for them to make.
That shag-carpeted basement den.
Yeah. It was very vibrant. Again, the early 1900s, this was brighter than a lot of things people got. You know, we didn't have kind of pigmentation techniques that we have now.
I mean,
So even paint was kind of, like...
Victorians were incredibly brightly colored, though.
Yeah, mostly in fabric. So you're talking, this is something that's not fabric, that's like crazy bright, pretty and colorful. And it was like marbled, sometimes translucent. I think the thing it changed the most was jewelry. Because up until now, we didn't have a cheap, easy, or like versatile way to make jewelry. Because jewelry was always made with precious metals, semi-precious metals that were harder to work with. Bakelite made jewelry super easy and cheap to make. It could be molded, it could be cut, and it came in a pretty wide, I'm saying three colors. It came in a pretty wide variety. You got pinks and reds and, you know, sometimes they were dotted, checkerboarded, really like wild stuff. Again, early 1900s. The popularity of Bakelite led tons of competing companies to experiment with different fillers or lack of fillers to try to make exciting, pretty new colors and finishes. So like it really took off fashion wise. And again, Bakelite pretty much started plastic innovation. Like there were a lot of plastics coming out now, which would, again, eventually change the way we approached industry.
Did he ever crack shellac, though?
He did, actually. He found a way to turn Bakelite into a reliable varnish. It was, for a good portion until he started experimenting with other companies making jewelry, his number one use of Bakelite.
Oh.
Yeah. There's, like, a background of this whole story where it's just Leo Bakelite becoming disgustingly rich. I just didn't think that was super interesting.
That's fair.
So yeah, like all of these other new and interesting plastics, I'm not going to talk about them because there's hundreds, but they're all Bakelite, thanks to Leo Bakeland. So you may be asking, and actually Ken already asked, how do you tell it apart from other plastics?
Hey Dee, how do you tell it apart from other plastics?
Well, good thing you asked. I didn't think you'd ask. A lot of people swear by the smell test. Now, we covered this kind of moments ago with talking about celluloid, about how celluloid will emit a smell when heated.
No one can see the face I'm making right now, but I assure you it's grotesque.
So the smell test is the same thing. Most people I know actually will rub it vigorously against their hands until it's warm. I think hot water is easier and better. You can make it hotter than with celluloid because you won't have problems. It will emit, when hot, a distinct acrid smell. I've heard it described as like formaldehyde. This is not a very helpful description to most human beings. So I would say sickly sweet and fishy. Really nasty smell.
Is that what formaldehyde smells like?
Yeah.
Huh.
Like, if you dipped a fucking, like, half-rotten fish in, like, sugar coating, and it was really hot. It's, like, kind of like that.
I feel like there's at least one restaurant trying that right now.
Oh, God.
Anyway.
I mean, there are other ways to do it, but, you know, you kind of consider these to be the more advanced methods.
Ooh.
Yeah, which just means that they're harder to figure out. There are people out there who specifically identify Bakelite by slamming it against another piece of Bakelite, because the noise it makes is distinct. Again, this takes a lot of trial and error, and a lot of getting pieces you trust are real, and smacking them together.
Is the resulting noise kind of like a sickening hollow chunk?
No, it's just like a clack noise, but it's a different clack noise from other plastic. So as you can tell, this is kind of an artisanal way of doing it.
I wish we had like two pieces of Bakelite to like chang together in front of the microphone.
I've done it, and I guess I'm not like smart enough to suss out the differences. The other thing is finish, which is just as tricky. It almost never has mold marks because it tended to be carved or injection molded. And it has, you know, like all things micro wear, small scratches and scuffs and texturing and chips that indicate that it's been used. You know, newer plastics almost always have visible molds, and Bakelite just pretty infrequently ever had them. Again, these are tetchy. I don't recommend the smell test. That would be a lie, because I can't smell very well. You know this about me.
I mean, I feel like other people who can smell, like an average human smells.
Yeah, for other people who can smell, this is their favorite way of doing it, so try that. Maybe you'll enjoy the smell of formaldehyde then. So yeah, so I can't smell super well, so I don't detect the subtleties as easily. So for people like me, and people who just don't want to smell that shit, and I don't understand why this one's not more popular, I use the silver polish test. I guess because people don't have silver, I do. Because I love polishing silver. You can use silver polish or simichrome, which is a general metal polish that's safe for most metals. You take the simichrome or silver polish and wipe a small, non-obvious piece of the plastic with a small amount, with a piece of white tissue or paper towel. If it's Bakelite, the polish will come away a mustard kind of yellow color.
Ugh.
Yeah, it's the plastic's reacting with the acids in the silver polish or the simichrome.
Gross.
It doesn't damage the plastic in any way at all, but it's just in case it's not Bakelite and it's gonna get fucked up. That's why you do like a part that you don't generally look at. There are people who do the pin test. Don't, it's plastic, you'll ruin it.
Oh, the hot pin.
Yeah, and even if you find out that it's not Bakelite that way, it might have been another valuable plastic piece.
It might have been celluloid and now your house is a fire.
Yeah,
good job.
It also just might have been cute. Like, don't do it. There are other, as I've demonstrated, there are other pretty reliable ways of determining these things. Important note, simichrome method doesn't work on black or lacquered Bakelite. The smell test does, so.
All right.
If you start with the polish test and you get like a false negative, you can just do the heat thing to double check.
Get ready for that sugar-coated rotten fish smell.
I hope you like it. Anything else you want to know about Bakelite that I might be able to help you with?
Why it's collectible? Like what? Like, now that we know what it is and how to test it, what kind of collectibles can we expect it to be in? Like, you mentioned jewelry and furniture. Is that...
The furniture, not so much.
Okay.
The furniture is usually used as a varnish, and you're not going to be... That's usually gone by the time you get to the furniture now. Jewelry. Jewelry, jewelry, jewelry.
Is it ever in, like, dishware?
No, not in dishware or, like, eating pieces. It's in a lot of household pieces. Radios got made of it a lot. Spoons, sort of. That one's like a little dicier. I don't want to...
collectible spoons?
I don't know why I said... Yeah, collectible spoons. I don't know why I said that one, because it's like, that would be a weird one, actually. Dresser jars, jars in general, combs, toothbrush handles, stuff like that. Just any accoutrement you've gotten kind of used to being made out of plastic other than dishware. Hair pieces. And it had, you know, obviously, again, the industrial uses because it was super non-conductive and didn't melt very easily.
So it was good as, like, an insulator?
Yeah, excellent insulator. But yeah, I'm trying to think of other household products, like...
What if I were to start a Bakelite collection right now, today? How much money would I lose?
That's a good question. They tend to be... Nice pieces tend to be pricey, but it's also not super valuable. Like, people aren't into it anymore. I don't want to say they're still valuable, because value is how much someone is willing to pay, and that seems to be nothing at all lately.
But they still have historical merit to those interested in early plastics?
Yes.
There we go.
And they were once an incredibly hot collectible. I hear rumor that it will be again. I don't know how true that is. I would say a medium unembellished bangle bracelet would be, like, $20 or so.
That's... more than I was expecting.
Yeah, Bakelite's very collectible. A radio in good condition made out of Bakelite will run you in the hundreds, depending on what kind of radio it is in addition.
How about a used toothbrush?
Like $5.
That is more than most used toothbrushes go for, so...
You can also see Bakelite as fixtures on other pieces, like metal pieces. Those are worth whatever they're worth. That's kind of unrelated to the Bakelite. Game pieces tend to go pretty high. Chess pieces and Mahjong, for example. I don't know if that's because they're large collections of things made out of Bakelite, or just because game pieces are inherently collectible on their own. But make of that what you will. You'll be paying in the hundreds for a set of those. You can find small pieces for 10. As soon as you get into complex designs like the checkerboard patterns or the polka dot ones, you're starting to look at 50 so. Big complicated, like, carved links or something, it just starts going up from there.
Sorry, it's just...
Still want to know why people like it.
No, it's just, like, all the things you're listing, that would be like, oh, like $20, $50, $100, I'd be like, I would have thrown that in the garbage yesterday and stomped on the bag.
That's so rude. That's so rude to old plastics.
Tell you what, I will trade all of my old plastic for, like, all of your silver shit.
Oh, wow. Oh, how generous. Because, you know, silver has a weight value that plastic just doesn't.
I was going to say, like, because I actually enjoy looking at silver.
That's a fair point. But people mostly like it for the same reasons. They like anything kind of mid-century modern. And ironically, I don't know if this is irony technically, and I don't want to be that guy, but pretty much the polar opposite of the reason people liked it when it was made. People liked it because when it was made because it looked super futuristic and it looked like the future. People like it now because it looks crazy retro. And it was used pretty widely, I think, up until, I want to say, the 1960s.
Dang.
Funnily enough, celluloid was used until the 1940s.
People were just super into...
People were just like, oh, like, Bakelite existed at a point and they were still using celluloid for stuff, despite the fact that it was pretty frequently bursting into flames.
You know.
And corroding their metal.
Just fun things.
If you're interested in collecting Bakelite, you can head on down to where? Your local antique store. And, you know, ask around. See what they got. Etsy's really, really good for Bakelite.
Really?
Yeah, Bakelite's pretty popular on places like Etsy because it's... I don't know. Etsy just tends to trend towards the mid-century modern kind of look. It's very hashtag aesthetic. So you can find a lot of Bakelite pieces there.
I just... Like, on the one hand, I hate that mid-century modern is popular because it's hideous garbage.
Please forgive him. If you're into mid-century modern, I get it.
On the other hand, I'm glad that it's popular because it's finally moving. It's not just sitting in the store. It's, like, getting out the door because people, these fools keep buying it because madmen.
This is our podcast where Ken calls you a fool for being interested.
No. You can please do buy foolish. All of it. Please do buy up all of the mid-century modern so I don't have to look at it anymore.
So yeah, Bakelite is fascinating. It can be very beautiful. And it changed the world.
Hey. Now, all right. I do have one more question.
Yeah.
You mentioned celluloid being super flammable.
Yeah.
Does Bakelite actually explode?
No, not that I've ever heard.
Okay.
If you have a story about Bakelite exploding, please let me know. I've never heard about it reacting badly to anything.
I heard old wives' tale about, like, old billiard balls, like, exploding on impact.
I could see if maybe it was in a burning building, maybe it would explode. I can't, like, guarantee that. I don't know a lot about how it reacts to combustion.
Girl was just trying to keep me out of the pool hall.
Just trying to keep you out of the pool hall. Just trying to keep you honest. Make an honest man of you.
Well, she did her darndest.
I've never heard that before. That's weird. That's what a weird thing. My sources, two sources that I need to note are www.plasticsmakeitpossible.com. That's plasticsmakeitpossible.com, which is just like a fan site for plastic, which is like neat. They specifically use the phrase, "Even the most beautiful things have a dark side," to describe why Bakelite smells so bad. And I thought that was very poetic and everyone should know. Also, there's a PBS article you can look up called Bakelite or Fakelite.
That's great. PBS is great. And I love them.
I would say that they have visual representation of the things I said. And I did know these before. I literally just cited it because I love the title. So you can just look at pictures of them doing this and then not be able to experience them.
Yay.
Because it's a smell. So yeah, thanks to those two websites.
If you know why people might think billiard balls explode on impact, hit us up at antiques_freaks.
Yeah, I'm really curious to know if there's any reality behind that and why.
If you would like to buy a bunch of mid-century modern stuff, just please, please do.
Go on Etsy. Please. Again, I would stay away from eBay for this stuff because there's a lot of new plastics masquerading and it's tough to tell when you can't touch it, so.
Would Etsy not have that same issue?
Not really.
You still... I mean, I don't know how your laptop works, but on mine, I can't touch the Etsy.
People tend to provide more evidence. Like, I've seen a lot of Etsy listings that will include a Simichrome test.
Oh, okay.
Like, on the item. So, just, you know, keep your wits about you. I feel like there were just generally less liars on Etsy. I don't, like... Shout out to Etsy for being loyal.
Alright, you can also check us out on Tumblr at antiquesfreaks.tumblr.com, or you can email us at antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com.
We also have a Patreon, so give us money and we'll give you stuff.
Okay, cool.
Fair trade, fair exchange.
You can get access to deleted scenes, because yes, we do actually cut stuff. And you can also...
Hard to believe, I know.
You can also join the... Random Antique Postcard of the Month Club, where we will arbitrarily select a beautiful vintage postcard and send it to you in the mail.
Yeah. Well, I think that's it for today.
Cool.
Cool.
Go buy Bakelite.
Go buy Bakelite.
It definitely won't explode.
Probably.
Probably not.
All right. Bye.
Bye.